This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The 1986 film Blue Velvet will be out next week on a new special edition DVD featuring deleted scenes and new interviews. Today we'll hear from the director, David Lynch, and two stars of the film, Isabella Rossellini and Dennis Hopper.
All right. We're giving our neighbor a joyride. Let's get on with it. Anyone want to go on a joyride with us? How about you?
Dennis Hopper made his comeback in Blue Velvet, confirming that he was brilliant at acting crazy. Just a few years before Hopper's comeback, he was institutionalized, paranoid, and totally disoriented from years of drugs and booze. Hopper started acting in movies when he was a teenager and had a small part in Rebel Without a Cause. In 1969, he became famous for directing and co-starring in the counterculture road movie Easy Rider. More recently, he played the Serbian terrorist Viktor Drazen in the TV series 24. We're going to hear an excerpt of my 1990 interview with Hopper. We talk first about Blue Velvet. He won a Best Supporting Actor Award from the National Society of Film Critics for his performance. The Society also gave Blue Velvet awards for Best Film, Best Director, and Best Achievement in Cinematography. Blue Velvet is set in what appears to be an idyllic small town, until a young man, played by Kyle MacLachlan, finds a severed ear in the grass. His search for the story behind the ear leads him to some strange people, including Hopper's character, Frank Booth. Frank is sadistic and crazy, but when Hopper read the script, he said to David Lynch, "I am Frank."
I didn't have a problem with Frank. I just understood him. I called David. I'd never met David, and he'd given me the part, and I called him. He was down in North Carolina already. They'd begun filming. And I said, "You don't have to worry about this. I am Frank. I really understand this role." So he got off the phone. He told Isabella and Kyle MacLachlan and Laura that, he said, "My God, I just got off the phone with Dennis Hopper," and he said he was Frank. He said, "That may be great for the movie, but how are we going to have lunch with him?" But I really meant that I understood the role, and I do understand Frank. You know, I've known Frank. I've known a lot of guys like Frank.
Did you think that you were like Frank at some point in your life?
Well, I understood his sexual obsession, you know, and I, even though David wrote it as the stuff that he was sniffing as helium, I had always thought of it as some sort of drug, you know, like an amyl nitrate or a nitric oxide. And I asked David if it would be all right to play it that way. He had helium on the set, and the helium, all helium does, it doesn't disorient your mind. All it does is make you sound like Daffy Duck. So I tried it, and I said, "David, I'm really aware. I'm just hearing my voice. I'm not, you know, able to act." I said, "I want something. Couldn't I try to use something that, like, disoriented my mind?" And he said, "What?" And I said, "Well, think, watch this, like I do a sense memory of an amyl nitrate, nitric oxide or something." He said, "What are those things?" I said, "Just watch." So anyway, he liked what he saw. And I said, "If you want to dub that voice in the helium voice in later, we could do that." And he said, "No, I don't think it'll be necessary." Anyway, we didn't dub it in later, and it did work. But, you know, since then, I started thinking how strange it would be if I'd used that helium voice and not had it disorient my mind. What a strange character he had actually written, even more stranger than my portrayal of Frank.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
You know, it'd just been this guy who takes this, that does this mask and gets this weird voice and then does all those things and nothing else happens to him. It would be very bizarre. But anyway, because when I read it, I thought of it that way, of the drug kind of drug-crazed guy and the sexual kind of strange appetite that he had. I could identify with those things.
Do you like roles with the kind of intensity that your performance has in the character of Frank?
Well, like, you know, I think that probably of all the work that I've done, Frank is probably the flashiest role I ever had.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like it on that level. Yeah.
Your first movie role was in Rebel Without a Cause. You were, I think, 18 years old. Did the movie help give you a sense of teenagers being their own culture and their own misunderstood culture? Were you already feeling that way?
When I went on that picture, I saw James Dean for the first time act, and at that point, all I was concerned about was being an actor. I wasn't concerned about, like, you know, whether people were juvenile delinquents or not. I'd sort of come out of that, out of San Diego and Tijuana and that kind of area. But I was interested in acting, and I saw James Dean act, and I basically through Rebel Without a Cause, I was just trying to figure out what he was doing because I thought I was the best young actor at that time in the world, and I suddenly ran into this guy who was some years older than me, but he was doing work that I was so far over my head, I actually grabbed him on the Chicky Run and threw him into a car and said, "What are you doing? You got to teach me what you're doing."
So what did he teach you?
He wanted to know what my motivation was for wanting to act. Yeah. And he asked me if I'd had a problem with my parents, that if I had actually hated my parents, and that that was part of the drive that I had to want to become an actor. And I said that actually I had felt that. And he said, well, that's what he felt also, and that his mother died when he was very young, and he used to go to her grave and cry on her grave and say, "Mother, why have you left me? Why have you left me?" And that turned into, "I'm going to show you, I'm going to show you, I'm going to be someone." And that was the drive that he had brought into his acting, which I described the same sort of feelings that I was misunderstood by my parents, and that I had that feeling when they came to the theater that I was going to show them. And it was like, you know, I'm going to show you, I'm going to be something, I'm going to be an actor. So this drive, this confused kind of drive and wanting to put it into other people's other parts and other things, and these feelings to use them in some sort of imaginary given circumstance became the key for acting. But anyway, he said you must learn how to not worry about the emotions, but you must learn how to do things and not show them. You must learn how to smoke a cigarette and just not act smoking the cigarette. You must learn how to drink a drink, not act drinking the drink. And if somebody knocks on the door, you go and answer the door. Then you see they have a gun in their hand. Then you react to the gun and so on. So basically, it's like don't indicate, but like do something and don't show it. And moment-to-moment reality. Never anticipate what the next moment's going to hold. When he died, it just destroyed me because I totally had this belief in destiny and how people are destined, to be to fulfill their destiny, you know. And I just couldn't understand why James Dean had died so young. He wanted to direct movies. He had only been in three movies, and it just destroyed my whole concept of destiny, life, and that kind of thing for years. I mean, probably still till this day, it still bothers me. I miss him. I wish I'd have seen his work.
Dennis Hopper, recorded in 1990. This is Fresh Air.